You will sleep better than you have ever slept. You've never been this relaxed. Are you ready to change your life?
I'm Rusty Diamond, certified hypnotist. You don't need to leave your house. You can stay in your bed. You can stay in your favorite chair. You just need a computer or your phone. You can get a hold of me. Stay at home. I'll make your life better.
HypnosisIsGreat.com.
It's Rusty Diamond, motherfucker. It's Rusty Diamond, motherfucker.
Yo, man. Boom, Miss Rusty. What is happening, everybody? Welcome to the Public Access Podcast, the podcast, now Pennsylvania's podcast. Thank you, everyone, for being here. If you are watching this and you are sick of my face already, but you love the content, love the guests, go to most anywhere you listen to podcasts, search the Public Access Podcast. If you are listening to this and you think, oh, well, you know what? I could watch this. I could watch it. Go to YouTube or Rumble, type in the Public Access Podcast. And there'll be a bunch that are going to show up. Take your pick. Take your pick. And thank you, everyone, again, for being here. If you want to find me, RustyDiamond.net or HypnosisIsGreat.com. And if you are looking for me to get my guest on, you know what? It's that time. So it's time for me to bring on my special guest right here and right now. And my special guest right here and right now is Jim Salvucci. Thank you for being here, Jim. How are you doing today?
Okay. Thanks for having me, Rusty.
Yeah, man. Heck yeah. You are welcome. It's Friday, I mean, whatever that means in anybody's life, I don't know. Friday's another day. What's good Friday day. Mean to you?
Friday means that I've got the weekend coming and get to do a little relaxation.
What's that look like for you?
Relaxation?
Yeah, what's relaxation look like for you?
Mostly hang out with my wife. I've got a couple friends who live nearby. We might hang out with them. It's beautiful here this weekend, so gorgeous day. I live in upstate New York. It's gorgeous.
So, okay. So how, I mean, upstate New York is
it's a vast area.
It's a vast area and it can mean a lot of different things depending on where you live. I mean, upstate could be 10 minutes outside the city, as well as Niagara Falls or something.
In terms of official designations, I'm not in upstate. Upstate's north of here, but I'm in the mid-Hudson.
Okay. Yeah. So then that, okay. Yeah, it's always interesting to hear that part. But yeah, I like it. I like it up that way. It's kind of nice. So, yeah. Okay. And so, let's see. So, I mean, yeah, Friday. Are you a Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 kind of a thing? Or are you up at like work, start working at 3 o'clock in the morning?
I'm self-employed. So I am up, I get up early. I start working around 8. I pretty much quit around 6, but I take breaks because that's what I preach in my business. And I do tend to work on weekends, but I don't have to all the time. And I do a lot of writing, so that happens a lot on weekends.
So when you're taking your breaks, is that getting up, walking around? Is that
going? It could be anything. It could be getting some exercise, going for a walk. It could be just getting up, doing a little movement. I've taken up ukulele in my dotage, so I might bang on the ukulele for a couple minutes, which I find very relaxing.
So what How'd that happen? How did you get into ukuleleing?
Yeah, I don't know. I used to try to play guitar when I was younger, and I never had the patience. And then I decided, you know, I'm getting older. I should pick up an instrument and see it. And ukulele only has four strings, so it's a lot easier.
Did you find one somewhere, or do you seek it out? Were you at like at a shop or
No.
something? And
I bought it online. I decided to just look go for it. It was during COVID. You know, people picked up things during COVID. They picked up
right,
COVID and they picked up the instruments.
yeah. And so then, okay, so during then you were able to. And so, what was your learning style then, I guess? Were you going on to YouTube and copying someone? What
Yeah.
they're doing?
There's like
Cool. Okay.
YouTube instructors, you know, that kind of thing. And that's how I picked up the basics. And then I started just using apps to get the chords and whatnot. I play a kind of guitar style. I don't really care for the ukulele junka 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 style.
Yeah. Okay, that's cool. And so like, I mean, I'm a big fan of YouTube University. That's so
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, I definitely have gotten multiple certifications that way. Well, self-certification, no actual paperwork, but learn
Affirmations.
affirmations. Yeah,
Yeah.
I love it. I love YouTube. And I mean, this kind of goes into also with what you do with, I mean, don't stop learning. Don't, there's no need to stop learning, but there's other ways. There's other ways to learn things, and there's anything out there you could ever want.
Yeah.
And it's free. I mean, for the most part, I mean, you have YouTube. You can't find it on YouTube. I mean, there's Harvard, there's Stanford, there's MIT.
You can find that on YouTube as well. So,
Yeah, right.
I
Okay, so then you got YouTube on there.
mean, years ago, I heard YouTube, and this is a long time ago, I heard YouTube described as the archive of our culture. And that's more
Right.
true now than it was back then, you know?
Yeah. And I love it. I love that there's all this information just kind of right here. I mean, it's a lot easier than, what we had to do. And I couldn't imagine the simplicity and streamlining of what would go on. I think I would have learned how to get it. I mean, to be honest, if I was in middle school, high school right now, I would have all my work done. I would have AI do every bit of it, and then I would go and learn something else and just do enough just to get like all that done out of my way so I can go and focus on something else. And that's kind of still kind of what I think I would do if I was doing some sort of schooling now.
Was a
Just
former
to,
college professor that cuts me to the core.
right. Yeah. And it's, I don't know. 'Cause yeah, I mean, I went to college for a while and that was 20 years ago at least. And I don't know. I don't think that I got what I got everywhere else. But I also like, I don't know, like what I was going to school for was kind of useless, I guess, in the hindsight. And it's, and yeah, like my sister-in-law is a professor, and she was saying that I think she got a whole bunch of papers turned in, and she could tell a lot of them were made by a computer, and said, like, I'm gonna give everyone a zero. If you want to right now, you can go and turn it in, and I'll give you another chance. No questions asked, and then no one really even did that. It just sort of just okay, yeah, maybe she won't catch me. But
Yep.
so you were a college professor, and then you, I mean, so were you, I mean, I don't know. I mean, getting through to the students in a way, or because I mean, if it was college, I mean, they should be there for some sort of reason. But then in actuality, I mean, like, how many people are going because it's, I mean, I ask people this now, why they're going to college. And I had some kid, and I don't know, I think he was in college at the time. And I asked him, and it was basically like, I don't know. Basically, I said, like, well, so you're going because you don't know what you're doing. You're going to college to go to college. And it's just like, well, like, I don't have, you know, basically it was his parents would pay for it and he doesn't have to do shit for 4 years. I mean, you're still doing stuff, but so what got you into wanting to be a college professor?
Well, it wasn't my first career, but I'd always wanted to do it. I was an English professor. I just loved studying literature, so I just wanted to do what I love and what I was good at, and I wanted to teach other people those skills, right? You know, because you learn how to think and write and research and do all these practical things.
And so, and but okay, so I mean, you got people with a bunch of different learning styles and stuff, and how were you able to kind of adapt to that, or did everyone kind of have to adapt to your style?
Yeah, I mean, the learning style thing's kind of, it's kind of been debunked. Like, everyone has their learning style, but no one has a single learning style. And you know, they can be circumstantial, and you don't have to actually match the teaching style to the learning style. People can adapt pretty easily. I mean, but you mix it up, you know. You try to do a little visual, you try to do some stuff that's written down, you try to do some stuff that's just oral. You know, the other one is the kinesthetic, right? Where you what's physical,
Hands on.
you don't want to be touching students, but so I avoided that one like the plague. But you
That's
know,
good.
it's not a it's not so set in stone, although they still, and this kind of ticks me off, they still teach that in like teacher training. They teach learning styles and you got to match the learning style. And that has been utterly debunked for decades.
And so then why hasn't, I mean, there's a zillion different answers that I could say about like why it has not been updated. But I
I could
mean,
go on and on about
yeah, well,
it.
I mean, please do. I mean, I
You
could
know,
go, yeah,
there's a
with
because
one.
a lot of the way, and I used to I became an administrator, and I actually oversaw education programs, big ones, and they do a lot of good in terms of producing teachers, but they also they're so set in their ways, they're so kind of just locked in. Everything's about meeting standards, right? You have these national accreditations, you have state accreditations you got to meet that are set by outside bureaucracies. And so you got to match them. And if they say learning styles is in, then you got to deal with learning styles. It doesn't hurt. You know, like the learning style thing doesn't hurt anyone, but it is a waste of time.
And I mean, yeah, I'm from Oregon. And I mean, so like with Oregon, you don't need to be proficient in reading, writing or math to be able to be advanced to the next grade anymore.
Yeah,
And
that's
I
a
mean, that raises those graduation rates, and it makes sure that, you know, those numbers are being hit.
You
But
want to hear about Goodhart's Law,
well,
which is the
please,
reason
yes.
behind that? Like, this is something I don't know why more people don't notice this, but there's a, it's an it's it comes from like a 1970s economist named Goodhart, and it's been adapted many times. But the idea is that, just in layman's terms, if you set a measure as your goal, right, a number as your goal, then the goal kind of becomes, or the measure becomes irrelevant, right? Because people tend, and my codicil to that is people tend to game the system. So a classic example is when like a state police force has a ticket quota, you
Oh,
know,
okay,
and
yeah.
they're supposed, why do you have tickets? Well, ostensibly to get people to stop driving fast. Right, you're so you don't so they're not a danger to society, right? But then they cluster, like you see all these cops at the end of the month clustered on the side of the road, you know, giving out tickets. Well, that's hardly a deterrent for 3 weeks out of the month, right? So it
That's
defeats the purpose. That's a perfect example of Goodhart's law, where you're kind of like the measure, getting this number, hitting this number becomes more important than the actual goal, which is to slow people down. It's the same thing with standardized tests in education. That's why you have schools teaching to the test, you have teachers teaching to the test, you have people cheating. You have entire school districts cheating on standardized tests. Why? Because their funding is tied to the grade those students get on those standardized tests. Their prestige is tied to that grade. But that grade is a measure, not a goal. And since you're using the measure as a goal, you know, you end up gaming the system.
Yeah, and it's only really just to remember it to forget it. In a way, I mean, there's so much of that test, like, you know, studying for that mm-hmm. way is just to have those things only in that. I mean, how much of that's getting put into your long-term memory?
None.
Yeah, it's just there. Just yeah. get it until the third week of whatever yeah. on a Saturday. Get it to then, and then you never have to think about this ever again in your yeah. life. You know, maybe yeah. maybe you go on Jeopardy, it might show up somewhere, but probably not. And it's yeah. it's ridiculous. There's so much of that it's not meant to go into your long term. I mean, the main thing supposed to go into your long term is that, you know, set by the I always forget. I want to say it's the Rockefellers that started the school system. If it wasn't the Rockefellers, it was
The public school system?
The public school system.
I don't know if any one group is kind of a state by state thing, I think.
So what I heard was it was that they kind of spearheaded it to get it. So you have the 8 hours a day, 5 days a week for 12 years, because it takes that amount of time to in your subconscious, unconscious memory, indoctrinate someone fully with an idea, which would be able to give them the best workers to get ready for that 5 hours or 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, you know, lifetime until they're at that time was, you know, not the age it is now, but yeah, it takes 12 hours or 12 years, 5 days a week, 8 hours a day to indoctrinate someone kind of, you know, unknowingly, but
right,
it works. I'm pretty sure it's Rockefeller. If it's not Rockefeller, it is someone just like it, but yeah.
I have no idea.
But I don't know. That's kind of how it goes, I guess. So it was him. It was Rockefeller, and he created the General Education Board at the ultimate cost of $129 million and provided major funding for schools across the nation.
Wow.
And very influential in shaping the school system. So, I mean, yeah, you got...
When was that?
I think it said 1929.
Okay.
So, yeah, what a year, too, to have...
Yeah, yeah, just in time to crash the economy.
Right, yeah. Interesting. I didn't put that together until just now. I was like, oh, okay, 1929, huh? So, yeah, I mean, that kind of makes sense. And so what was it that, and you probably answered this a bunch of times, but what was it that got you to be like, hey, I need to take a step back? I guess not what got you to finally leave, but what got you to start questioning, like, it might be time for me to get out, or I'm seeing stuff here that I'm not fully on board with.
Yeah. Well, I became an administrator, right? So I became a dean, and then I was a provost at a couple different colleges, right? So number two to the president. And I got to see higher ed leadership up close and personal. And there's almost a hostility to the notion of leadership in higher ed. And some of my former colleagues would be appalled to hear me say that, but it's true. And I have receipts. And I had one. I actually did work for a president who was fabulous for 1 year, and then he retired. It was a disaster for me. Because a new guy came in and cleaned house. But so he was wonderful. He was the best boss I ever had. He's really he was a true leader. He'd been doing it for 22 years.
Whoa.
And he was just great. But
what was it? What was it about him that made him?
He was honest, frankly, and he took responsibility. It wasn't about his ego, which was a big deal. It wasn't about his ego. It was about getting the job done, doing right by the students, doing right by the university at all times. But the you know, it was stacked against him even at that time. You know, it just, the whole system is stacked against him. He was kind of a freak out there. I had a friend who became a president of a very elite school, not too far from where you are. And she took over as president, and it turned out there was a massive hole in the budget. And by massive, I mean millions. Whoa. She's brand new, and she did the right thing. She called the press, right? What they usually do is they're, oh, don't tell anybody. Blah, 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 blah. And now you've got two problems. You've got the problem of that you have, right? The financial problem.
Right.
And you also have a publicity problem. Now you're covering something up. You know, why would you do that? So she immediately called the press and gave an interview and ended that problem right then and there. Nobody cared after that, right? And so, and took that off the table. The board was furious with her. And started, like, blaming her for the hole in the budget, which she couldn't possibly have created.
Right.
You know, I mean, this is typical. This is how these things go, you know? If you try to do the right thing, the board is against you. You're just bucking the system. The board is not interested, generally, in the institution as an institution of education. They're interested in fundraising. Their priorities are, like, in no particular order, fundraising, sports, and the business program, if you have one. They obsess over the business program.
Because, bottom line...
Well, they think that's what they know. They're all business people, and they think, oh, the business program, you know, they're knuckleheads about it.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's kind of that way. Like, yeah, if you bring in someone in, like, they obviously knew that there was a huge hole in the budget. You can't just kind of do that. And so maybe they were having her, you know, they hired her because they thought that it would be easy to start to pin it on her.
That's what it looked like.
And
then she went ahead and, like, you know, did the right thing, and they weren't expecting that.
Right. And so the press was happy, not the press, but the people who read, they're like, oh, wow, like, look what she did.
It was very cool. I never seen anything like it. It was very cool.
And I mean, so, and what happens then after that? Like, what, where's the, are they like going after her, you know, trying to,
I mean, there's been other things. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to out the college, there were other things that were her predecessor's fault that she kind of took the fall for, things that she couldn't possibly have even begun to move the needle on. You know, and she's just been embattled ever since. She's still there, but she's still embattled. You know, it's been years of this. And so here you have somebody who actually wants to lead, and they stack the deck against her.
And that's kind of the thing, like, with that too. Like, if you do, you want to go and, like, disrupt the system. One thing is, you do have to work with a bunch of dickheads.
Yeah.
And, like, every day you have to go in and do that. Like, I got into politics for a second, and then that's what I learned. I was like, well, I want to make this stuff better. And then it was like, I have to work with these people every day. Yeah. No, these people suck. These people are horrible. I don't want to spend my time doing this. It's not worth it. There needs to be something to change, but that's not the way to do it. For me, if she can hang with it, like, that's all more power to her. I mean, that's a hell of a fucking deck of cards to be fucking trying to work
but it's devastating. It's personally devastating, because I went through much the same thing, trying not to be the dick in the room with all these people who are dicks. And you know, and believe me, you don't have to say anything. If you just don't conform to their assholery, you're the asshole.
Right?
You don't have to do anything. You don't have to say, just don't be like them, and they're pissed because they know who they are. Deep down inside, they know they're corrupt to their core.
Right. And if it's not going to be you, it's going to be someone else. There's a line of people who would love to be that person, just that next person in line to climb that little ladder and get there. And
which is why I do what I do.
Yeah. And so then you were just one day, or was it like one big thing that happened, or was it like
I got fired. That was a big thing.
Okay, that'll do it.
I was a provost. I got fired. I was never told why. I know why. because there was another vice president who had it in for me from the day I started and had the ear of the president. And the president was incompetent, doesn't do it justice. AWOL would be more accurate.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah. And I was her number two. So I ended up picking up a lot of the slack, just ceremonial stuff, you know, events. She's not there. And it's like, what the hell? And I got to like step up and, you know, be the host or whatever. It was bizarre. And then one day she walks in my office and says, I want you out of here in 2 weeks. I was like, what?
Whoa.
Yeah. It was really weird. It was, and I said, why? And she was like, I just do, you know, it's just, there was no reason.
And so where, you, I mean, what was going through your head at that point? Was it like, was it, oh shit? Okay.
Yeah, well, it was shit, but it was at the same time, it was a little bit of relief because it was horrible working with those people. I mean, they were really bad people doing very bad things to students. I mean, they were, I actually thought about reporting them to the Department of Ed. I seriously looked into it and decided not to because too many good people would be hurt. But I thought they were doing bad things financially.
What do you mean, people like that would be kind of in the crossfire that were a part of it?
They had a fabulous faculty. They had a lot of great staff members. This would have damaged the college, if not destroyed it, if it were investigated. So I decided it wasn't. And in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen.
Right.
So,
well, I mean, what was it the other one that you were talking about that was the. The worst one, or was it something
else?
Well,
it's just, yeah, I can't get too into it, but yeah.
Okay, that's fair.
There were some things. Yeah, and, you sign stuff, you know.
Yeah, well, it's okay, so then, I mean, does that go into, I don't know, with your next point of your life, I mean, it's all stuff. And so like you have full like NDAs with them where you can't.
Yeah. I can't go into it. You can't even talk about stuff like that.
Yeah.
You can't, I mean, this is this disgusting thing. This is what you do.
Is it and for this life? Is,
yeah. Oh yeah. It's like in perpetuity and these things can extend deep into like, you know, to people's spouses. You can't say things about it's crazy. It is crazy. Wow. These agreements. Yeah.
That's something you sign first day.
Bad. And this is why bad. No, it's when you're leaving usually. Well, it's it's your time first guy. But and then it becomes, you know, it becomes like a way of covering up really dirty stuff, really dirty stuff. You know, sexual harassment, the whole nine, you know, that kind of thing. You witness stuff, and you're like you're not allowed to say anything.
Wow. And so then, yeah, then it's like, you know, you're not going to get like a severance unless you sign this thing.
That's one way they do it. Yeah. Yeah. They buy. And if you do something after you get the severance, they yank it back. They can pull it back.
Yeah.
I'm getting too far into this. I don't want to talk.
Okay. No, that's fair. That's fair. And so then you left. And so what's going through your head as you get out to your.
Well, I mean, I actually didn't leave higher ed. I was applying for jobs, but this was actually happened moments before COVID shutdowns, right? And then colleges went to hell in a handbasket. And I can tell you why they did. It's a very simple reason why they did it so badly, handled that badly, is because I have this saying that if everything's a crisis, nothing's a crisis. And by that, I mean, like, if you treat everything like, you know, your hair's got to be on fire, then there's no way to prioritize. And a lot of higher ed operates on that, right? The phone rings and everybody's like, oh my God, you know, it just really, like everybody's trying to out crisis each other. I got to deal with this thing, you know, and they're trying to be more important than they are. And when a real crisis comes along, they don't know what to do. They lose their heads. And this is a perfect example. Like these schools really had no way of coping. So they did this knee jerk thing with online learning, but online learning's very complicated thing to do. You can't just like throw professors in front of a camera and say, now you're learning online. There's lots of things that need to go in place. And this happened at every level of the education system. And some of it was, they had no choice. You know, it just was the circumstance, but part of it is just poor. Like if they had better crisis management skills, They could have, maybe at first it would have been a disaster, but then they could have gotten it together. And it was just a disaster all the way through. They never really come up with another solution. They had no, and I was applying for jobs at the time. And they were literally like, they advertise a job, interview me. And then I was supposed to find out there's another interview. And they weren't getting back to me because, oh, we're too busy with this because there's so much we have to do. And it's like, seriously? Seriously? Yeah. Like you're that much in crisis that like HR, which has nothing to do with academics, HR can't respond to an email. They were just like ghosting me. And I thought, and I realized, my God, wow. I hate this. I can't stand being with this. There's no logic. There's no principles. Forget that. It's all about getting through the moment.
And I mean, yeah, like, and so then this would have been, like you said, like somewhere close to March 2020, somewhere in there.
Yeah. And this was, you know, subsequent, ish. Like a year after it was
okay.
It kind of went on.
So what was it that you, I mean, you got to pick up your ukulele more. What was it like when you saw that things were going to be different? Were you, what'd you do? What was your kind of reaction to
everything? Well, I decided I was going to be a professional ukulele music. No, it was, I decided, I started thinking about what I wanted to do. And I realized one thing, I'm a lousy employee. I just am. I'm a bad employee. I had that one great boss, but I'm a bad employee because I'm going to tell you like it is.
They don't like that. They don't like that very much. That.
One way or the other, you're going to find out for me what it is. And no one really likes that. And you know, yeah. And so, and being principled, people say you're arrogant, and maybe I am, but I'm no more arrogant than the person sitting there, you know, acting pompous all the time and acting like they're never to be questioned. But, right. You know, so there's that. And I also realized that the thing I love, and I really love being an administrator, I have to say, I love solving problems. I love leading. I love getting people, you know, motivating people, inspiring people. But one of my favorite things to do was to work with young leaders and help them become great leaders. So I went out of my way to mentor people in order to help them become really great leaders. And I decided, well, that's what I want to do. Because, you know, one of the problems, and it's not just a higher ed problem. It is not a higher ed problem. It's a universal problem. One of the problems we have in this world is bosses suck. Pretty universally, right? Well, yeah. To me, the opposite of a boss is a leader. And so my goal is to take today's young bosses and guide them to become the next generation of great leaders. And it's exponential, right? I train five people. They each train five people. Compound interest.
Yeah. And I mean, so then what happens to them? Like, not to give away your program too much, but like if they come across something of they're put in the situation where it's going to be, you know, they're being put in like what your friend was put in where there's not really a win.
Yeah.
And
it's hard.
They're just,
you know, there's no universal answer. You know, sometimes there is no win. Sometimes the win is get the hell out. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, it's not a survivable situation. So avoid those situations. But the thing is, don't lie to yourself, right? For a while, I lied to myself. That's not that bad. Maybe it's me. Maybe I need to adapt. And then I realized, no. This is not right. And people would say to me, why don't you just conform? I mean, you know, they never use that word, but that's right. What they're saying. Just make nice over here and don't worry about that little thing over there. Well, that little thing over there affects students in a really negative way. Students aren't graduating because of what that person is doing. I'm not happy with that.
Yeah,
right.
That's a big problem.
That's a big
right
one.
There.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not happy with that. I'm not going to suck it up to make nice. I'm not going to go in guns a blazing. I'm not, you know, that's not a point. But I'm going to do everything I can to help those students and subvert what this person's doing. And that gets you in trouble.
Right. And yeah, that's also, yeah, why you start working on your own and
much more content.
Yeah. You know, if you got a problem with the boss, you know, then it's on you. It's
that's what it's that's whole... one of the deans who worked for me used to say that the last job I had, you say, if you have a problem with the boss has a problem with you, you've got the problem. And it's like,
yeah,
Yeah, okay. He was also a guy who wanted to sort of suck up to the boss all the time. And he did. And he got what he wanted. He got a better position after I left and all that. But was he doing right by people? No.
Yeah. And I mean, some people I think are can totally be fine with that and like put that to compartmentalize that and be like, yeah, that's just kind of how it goes. Like that's the game. That's the game.
Yeah.
I'm winning the game.
Yeah.
I'm doing great. But you know, whatever. Like
I lack
casualty
integrity,
of
but
war. Yeah. And I don't know. It's hard. But then when you can't do it, it's people can look at you like you're crazy.
yeah, well, that's
And
it. It's on you. It's not the bad behavior of these other people. They admit there's bad behavior.
right.
It's like when so I went to the University of Toronto for my doctorate, and when I lived
Okay.
in Canada, I got this sort of education. I moved there from New York City, right?
Yeah.
And big difference, right? Moved to Toronto. And at one time I was waiting for a bus, and there's this long, what they call a queue, right? A line of people waiting to get on
Yeah.
the bus. And Canadians are great for queuing up. They love to queue up. But there's
Sure
always
do.
some jerk who like sneaks on early and pretends he doesn't see the line. So, you know, somebody would do that every time, right? They would get in the bus, and I'd be in, like somewhere in the line, and I'd yell, "Yo, what are you doing? We're all waiting here." Everybody would look at me, and he would get on the bus scot-free. They would look at me. And
Yeah.
that's a metaphor for the way it works, right? If you call it out, you're the bad guy, not the person actually, not the perpetrator, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, who doesn't love to shoot the messenger?
Right. And that's what it is. And so when you're in those situations, and this is why it's so hard to cope, you know, if you try to do the right thing, you try to have integrity, no matter how you do it, and you don't have to be a jerk about it, you don't have to be an arrogant about it or anything like that. If you try to do it, people come after you. And so the best thing to do is get out.
Leave the line.
Yeah. Well, now you're going back to my metaphor, so good for you. But no, yeah, I mean, you know, or in that situation, it's probably just best to shut up because who cares? But when something's really bad going on, you know, it's not survivable. It's not.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, calling people out on shit, like, yes, the immediate response for 90% of the people is, yeah, whoever is calling that person out, like, it's them. Like, why aren't they? Everyone else seems to be fine. Like, what's up with them? What's going
Right.
on? Why do they have a problem? If it's going to be an extra 30 seconds I have to wait, or you know, 30 seconds of inconvenience. And I mean,
Don't make
you
waves. Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. Just let it
It
all go. That's what I used to get told all the time by people. It's like, it would be advising me, you know, just don't worry about that thing. It's like, this isn't a small thing. This is
right.
a big thing. I'm not going after little things. You know, I'm not
Yeah.
literally going after people waiting who didn't, you know, buck the line. I'm talking about big things that hurt people, that hurt institutions.
Yeah.
That's unacceptable.
It yeah, and but then yeah, then you're the person who's the one that's unacceptable. You become the person who's unacceptable because you're like, how dare people are thinking, how dare someone say that there is bad things, not perfect things going on in this realm of the world, and you know that it's against me. You're attacking
Right,
me,
it becomes
or
personal,
something
right?
I love.
And that's the other thing. When you do that, you also have to be willing to accept criticism, right?
Yeah.
So it can't be a hypocrite. So when I was doing that, I also was willing to accept criticism, and I listened to people's ideas and whatnot, and I made adjustments as I could, you know, as necessary. But if they're just telling me, "Nah, compromise your principles and hurt people," nah, I wasn't doing
Yeah.
that.
Yeah, no one needs to be doing that.
Yeah.
And I mean there's a lot of people that will. There's a lot of people, I mean their bottom line where they get into life physically and in whatever kind of thing to be able to go up that next little step, like it's probably better for them to keep their mouth shut. Like if Like I don't know, in fucking wrestling, in comedy, there's so much horrible shit going on that so many people will just shut up and not say anything because, you know, their person higher up is doing horrible things, but
Yeah.
I don't want to say anything because, like, that's how I'm gonna get up to that next level. That's how I'm gonna
Yeah.
succeed here. So
Yeah.
I'm just gonna shut up.
Yeah.
And I mean,
Yeah, and look,
I
no
don't,
one's
yeah.
perfect. People make mistakes. People go down the wrong path, you know, but if you're not willing to hear criticism, you're not willing to be corrected,
Right.
you're by definition corrupt. You don't have to be taking money on the side. That's a form of corruption. Right. And so you got to hold yourself to a higher standard. It's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah,
I
and
come up short all the time.
but you can say that you come up short all the time, and that then you can accept criticism, and that you can adjust what your reality is, what your, you know, it's not something that's concrete. If you say something that I don't agree with, I fucking throw my hands up and cover my ears or something.
Right.
You know, you're open to have that dialogue and, you know, see where things can be improved for the betterment of everyone. And you know, sometimes you're wrong. Sometimes you're not totally right. Sometimes you're fully right and no one gives a fuck, or, you know,
Right.
it's all over the place, and it's okay every way. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to let some things go through and some things to go unchecked. Sometimes you got to say something. And so you got out of there, you started being a ukulele pro, and having your business. So was it kind of started right away? Where did you go, I
Yeah, I
guess
mean, it's
after
been
that
through a
year?
few manifestations. I originally thought I would work with leadership in nonprofits because I've been on boards. My wife's worked for nonprofits, and I knew they needed a lot of leadership help. But the problem with nonprofits is they don't want to pay you for anything.
Right. Yeah,
You
you want to
know,
volunteer your time?
right? So there's grants available to them, and I was talking to foundations like, oh yeah, we write grants for that stuff all the time. You know, we'd love to do that. Or they don't write them all the time, that we have them available, but people don't ask for them because they want to write grants for new programs and things like that, which is a cycle that nonprofits get in all the time. They expand their programs to get they want money, so they expand their programs to get grants, and then the grants run out, but now they got this program, and now what do we do? On and on. It's just a and that's just bad leadership. That's bad leadership. Short-term thinking. You know, so I looked into that for a good while, and then I realized this is just a dead end. I'd moved to a new area. I was trying to make connections. It was all during COVID, so that was a little hard. And then as I evolved, I realized I needed to be more industry agnostic. So I'm pretty much open. And then I started focusing more and more on younger people because I realized I needed to get people before they were broken. So I mostly work with people like millennials, people who are not, you know, really, who are sort of new to bossing, who want to be good leaders.
Yeah. And so then, what was kind of your style to find people, at
Yeah.
first? Was it, 'cause I mean, there's so many different avenues of that when you have a new service for people. How are you kind of finding those
Yeah,
first
well,
few?
that's a steep learning curve, the marketing thing. You know, so yeah, I mean, some of it's through networking. I'm actually contract with an organization that actually supplies people from corporations, which isn't particularly lucrative, but it's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, I'm now trying to move more onto LinkedIn and start doing marketing there and get more people that way. It's, you know, but once you start getting referrals, then it sort of takes off. But I'm
Yeah, it's
also moving more toward speaking and writing. So I'm shifting my emphasis. I'm going to continue to coach because I love coaching and I'm good at it. But I
yeah.
also want to get more on stages, give talks, get on podcasts like this, and do some writing. So I'm talking to a publisher right now. I'm trying to get
Have
booked
you
out.
written already? Have you started writing already on it?
Yeah, so I have a podcast blog. It started out as a blog, and I write these essays, and then I read them aloud because some people like to listen to them.
Cool.
And I do that on a weekly basis, and I've got almost 190 of those.
Oh, okay.
So they're pretty polished, high quality essays. So there's a publisher wants to make an offer to me to compile some of these as a book. So yes and no, I've got it written, but I've got a lot of work to do to get into a book shape.
Cool. That's awesome. So then that kind of, I guess you have it all written out. I usually like asking authors kind of about the writing process, but that's your writing process is so different,
Yeah, it's
which
totally different.
is great. And
Yeah.
I like that a lot. And so with speaking though, so this is something that I'm kind of learning now. So with these speaking engagements, they have these online summits. Have you? And I'm finding out that a lot of those are pay to play.
Yeah, a lot, well, a lot of speaking gigs are too. A lot of
Is it?
podcasts are.
Yeah, I was crazy. It's crazy.
Well,
I don't know why I'm not doing it, but like
I
I don't
wouldn't
know.
be on
Yeah, I
it.
wouldn't be on it either. I have people saying, I had someone say like they wanted like $250 to be on a podcast, and then
Yeah.
I had someone I asked to be on a podcast, and they said it was the $200 fee for them to appear on the podcast. And I'm like, who the fuck are you? Like,
It's like it's
what?
well,
Like,
if you're using that for your marketing, it makes sense.
it's
Right. So if I was
sure.
if I thought that my best audience was a certain podcast that had a big audience and my people were there and I could reach them, paying $250 is a bargain.
Sure.
Right. Okay, I'll get on it and do. The problem is you really have to know that your audience is there and receptive and you're gonna be able to get your message across. The same thing with speaking. If you know that paying to get on a stage is a good way to market, sure, why not?
Yeah.
But it is, yeah, it's not for me. It's not what I do. It's not how I work.
Because if I'm going somewhere, if I'm going to be on a stage speaking, I'm want to get paid.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pay someone unless it's like some, yeah, there has to be very, very few opportunities that like I would pay to do it, but there's so many. It's just like this, not much going on, and it's like, well, why am I fucking paying for this? Like, I get a video or something, like
Yeah, I mean that's
maybe,
part of
but
it.
like
And you get in front of
it's
an audience and it gives you credibility if it's a prestigious gig, right?
right.
And that might get you other gigs. But the other thing that's more common is you don't get paid at all. Right? So you're not paid anything.
Right.
And
And
if you have to travel, you've got those
yeah.
expenses, so you're paying anyhow. But you want to do those things because you need to get your name out there. You're not going to get gigs unless you get gigs. Right.
Absolutely.
And
Yeah.
that's the problem. So like I'm going to be speaking in a week and a half in New Jersey, and this is not a paid gig, but they are covering my travel expenses, which aren't going to be considerable, but they're putting me up overnight in a hotel and giving me dinner and all that, which is nice. That's
Tolls on
actually
the
a great
turnpike.
gig. I'm sorry.
Tolls on the turnpike.
Yeah, but they pay for that. So they'll
Yeah,
pay for
okay.
my, they'll pay for my gas and all that. So that's great. That's a good gig. I'm not getting paid. I couldn't make a living doing that, but I'm breaking even. It's a
Yeah,
good use of my time.
that's a fair one. That's I feel that would be a good one. And so what are you speaking out or not speaking out, speaking on that
So I'm
one?
speaking to so I'm gonna be speaking on leadership, which is what I do, and I have something I call the four C's of leadership. It's one of my signature talks. So there's
Okay.
four elements of leadership. So a lot of people think that leadership is complex. Leadership is like dumbfoundingly easy conceptually. It's
Yeah.
incredibly hard to implement and even harder to maintain, right? That's the
Right.
hard part, is putting it in practice. But there's all these lessons and books and essays about these lists of leadership rules and whatnot. And they're all good, they're all valid. But they're impossible to do anything with because there's too many. So the human brain can only handle on average, about four things at a time. And that's kind of high. That's
Yeah,
kind of
that's
high. You know, if you're like really on and you're kind of a genius, you might get up to seven, right? But most
right.
people, four is pushing it, right? You're really pushing it. So I reduced all them, all these principles down to four. And they all happen to be with the letter C, so that makes it easy. And do you want me to talk about them?
Sure. Well, I mean, if you don't have to go and give away your
Oh, it's
stuff,
not a
but I
secret.
mean,
It's
yeah,
a,
I mean,
I mean,
you
I talk
can,
about it all the
yeah,
time. So yeah,
sure,
so it's so
if you
the
want.
first one is character, right?
Okay.
Who you are as a person, your values, right? What kind of person you are, and they build on each other. The second one is communication. Leaders have to be good communicators, and part of communication is your values, because you have to have a message, and that message will not have any value if you don't have character. So I'll give you an example. You've heard the fable, The Boy Who Cried Wolf,
Sure.
right? He comes out, he says, one day he says, I'm gonna play a joke, I'm bored. I'm gonna say there's a wolf and watch everybody run. Ha ha ha. And everybody comes running and there's no wolf. Does it the next day, everybody comes running, there's no wolf. Third day, there is a wolf and no one comes running. Why? Because they figure his message has no value, because he has no values. He's just a little creepy boy who gets eaten by a wolf. Good for him. So that is, you know, that is how character leads to communication. And then communication leads to compromise. You can't compromise without communication. You need to be able to have an exchange of ideas, and compromise is all about give or take, right? You meet somebody partway, not necessarily halfway. It might be, you know, 80, 80, 20, whatever. But you owe every some one person gives and the other person gives and both take. It's very transactional. And you know it, but the idea is that you're trying to get something done. And that leads directly to the fourth C, which is collaboration. You can't have collaboration without compromise. And with collaboration, that's when you're in a win-win situation. Right? Competition is the opposite. That's when it's a zero-sum game, right? You watch a baseball game and one team's going to win, one team's going to lose. That's a zero-sum game, right? But and it would be a boring baseball game, but what if they collaborated, right? If they work together, they could achieve more. If the goal is to hit a lot of home runs, well, we could do that. Just the pitchers just toss up, you know, just tee them up.
You
So,
get the Savannah Bananas.
right.
That's when you get the win-win.
You know, but you want the win-win situation when you're leadership. You want everybody to come out on top. You want your team to come out on top, and that requires collaboration.
And so, if people want to collaborate with you and find you, how can they do that?
They can find me at www.guidanceforgreatness.com.
Easy. That's pretty
Easy peasy.
simple.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on here, Jim. Happy we got to talk about what we got to talk about, from whatever it was we were going to go to wherever it is we got. So, happy for that. So thanks again for being on. I enjoyed getting to talk to you, and
Yeah,
hope you
me
have
too,
a,
Rusty.
you bet. Have a great rest of your day. All right.
Okay, you too.
All right. All right. That's Jim Salvucci. So give him a follow. Go find him. Get that checked out. Four C's. Four C's. Yes. So thank you everyone for listening or watching. You can find me, rustydiamond.net, or hypnosisisgreat.com. Hypnosisisgreat.net. So thank you everyone for being here. And that is the show. Man. Boom.
It's Rusty Diamond, motherfucker. It's Rusty Diamond, motherfucker.